And a good morning to you. Welcome to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. I absolutely love this time of year. Christmas, Kwanzaa, there's something about the holidays that brings out the best in people. And this morning, I have a special guest joining me via telephone from Wadesboro, North Carolina, to talk a little bit about the wonderful Christmas tradition that's been in her family for many, many years. Marlene Richardson, affectionately known as the Christmas Tree Lady, has brought the joy of Christmas and the holiday season in a delightful way, not only to her family, but to friends and anyone that enjoys the fullness of this season. Mrs. Richardson, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
The pleasure's all mine.
Absolutely. You are a jewel to the city of Wadesboro, North Carolina. Your beautiful home is a destination for people in and around your beloved city, all to see the hard work and love you put into decorating your home for the holidays. Tell our listeners about your annual efforts to bring such joy and sunshine around this time of year.
Well, I don't know if I'm bringing all that joy and sunshine to everybody, but I pray that I am. I really do it as a traditional thing in our family. So pretty much the Father has blessed me with so very, very much, and I know that I'm to share it. So that's why it's being shared.
Right, right. Now, in reading the wonderful history of what you do each year, I was particularly struck by the story behind the tradition. Your mother, Ethel Mae Mosley, fostered a unique tradition in your family using pine trees. Tell us about that.
Well, my mom, when we grew up, we had a little four-room house, and she had a cedar tree that we all went out and picked, and she decorated the cedar tree with all her stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I got old enough to go to school, you know, at school, during that time, you made lots and lots of decorations, so I couldn't wait to get home to put my decorations on my mama's tree. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, she was a young mother, and she said, "Oh, listen, you need your own tree. So let's go out and get you your very own tree so you can put your stuff on it." Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. We went out, and we didn't get a whole tree. We got the a pine limb, and sometimes we got a cedar limb. Mm-hmm. And we put it in a can, and I put all my stuff on it, and she told me you can put it anywhere you want to. So I just couldn't put it in there where hers was. So I found a place, and as the other sisters and brothers got older, they got one too. And as money got a little better in our home, my mama gave us a little string of lights so we could see Christmas everywhere. So when we look around, we could see Christmas, and she was a person that you prepared all year for your Christmas gifts. Mm-hmm. She said you got your joy out of giving, and we really did. And you made things, or you hid, and you did different things for every member of the family and all the neighbors so that everybody had a little something at Christmas. And that's how all of this started. It's not just for show. It's because it's the way I grew up, that everywhere you looked, you saw Christmas, which made you know Christmas was about giving. Because my mother said, doesn't matter what a person gives you, you're thankful, and they took the time to think about you. Mm-hmm. And the love that goes into a gift, whether you like it or not, is something they didn't have to do. So I'm appreciative for anything and everything that anybody ever gives me. And when I bow for everybody that I can think of that I've come in contact with.
Yeah.
And I do it with love. I don't buy stuff that people can buy what they want for themselves. Yeah. I just like to give them something to say, I thought of you.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about what you feel is the fullness of the Christmas holiday.
Oh, it's about being happy that you see. I feel like if you made the season, I called my neighbors just this past week. I didn't see a light in their home. And so I said to them, did you all not make the season? And they didn't understand what I was saying. And I said, and these are folks that go to church all the time. And I said to them, listen, if you made the season, you ought to speak to the world. And that's the folks who are going up and down your road.
Right.
And say, hey, I made the season by just putting a light in your window. It doesn't have to be a whole lot, but you ought to express your thankfulness by showing the world that you really, really, really are thankful by putting some type of light in your window to say, or in your door, or somewhere on your porch to say, I made the season.
Yeah.
You may not make Christmas, but I made the season.
Now, you start decorating in October. Of course, you have nearly 3 months to prepare for Christmas morning. Do you have an actual plan, something perhaps written down that you follow to make sure every piece is in its right place?
No. I don't. I decorate each time differently, and it's not because I thought of doing it. It's just that I just start from scratch, and as it comes to me, I put it up.
But no,
I don't have a plan. I don't do much planning for anything. I just trust that the Father will give me my directions.
Yeah.
Never really have. It's no fun.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a sort of a spiritual thing when you're actually going out and going from room to room. This is a spiritual thing, something that you're picking up in your spirit.
Oh, yes, 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 indeed, indeed. That's exactly what it is. I theme every room because it's just it's more interesting. So I just themed every room. I always thought I have a lot of grandbabies, so I have the Santa Claus room, the snowman, and it was all for children.
Mm-hmm.
But after I didn't get any, a lady told me not too long ago, I was talking about I didn't have any grandbabies, and she said, but Miss Richardson, you do. You have thousands. And she said, because you taught us all.
Yeah,
felt so good. So I do. I have lots of grandchildren.
Now, you mentioned you have particular themes in each room. I recall reading about the Nutcracker theme, the sunroom usually gets that theme. The dining room gets the fruit theme. And other rooms like an angel theme. Have any of the themes changed over the years? Have you incorporated additional types of themes?
Yeah, I did. I did a mouse tree this year.
Mm-hmm.
I did a 7.5-foot mouse tree, and it's in the Santa room. So all the mice have Santa Claus hats on them, but they're all different. I got Mickey. The kids love Mickey, so I got Mickey as the spotlight because Mickey and Minnie the kids identify with.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do. And my mantelpieces are always different because I make all of my centerpieces, so they're always different. Just depends on what I have and what's going on. If I see something, I've done something that's really, really interesting all year, I try to put that in it.
Now, do you have a favorite room? Is there a room in the house that has particular priority for you?
Oh, I love the reindeer room because it's my kitchen, and it has a fireplace in there, and I have done all the reindeers, and the tree is huge. It's 9 foot, and Rudolph is on there a lot of times with that red nose, and it just reminds me of being a child again. That's the joy of Christmas.
Yeah. Now, you have 15 decorated trees, I understand.
I actually have 17.
17.
Trees.
Wow. Are there any family members interested in taking on this tradition?
Yeah. My sisters do. My sisters decorate their house the same way. They do a little different from me. I'm the old-fashioned reds and greens, and I have to have red on every tree.
Uh-huh.
They are into, my sister next to me does the limes and the copper, those colors that are just gorgeous. And so does my daughter. You interviewing the wrong person. She has Christmas all over her house. How about that?
Well, you know, she made sure that I focused on you because you are the one that influenced her. And of course, she absolutely loves you. I mean, it's something that I hear all the time. So that's a wonderful thing.
You need to go and see and interview her about her home. She has that beauty. She has a boot tree, which is totally different from anything I have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that girl has oh my gosh, you should see her place. Everywhere she has she has Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Now, having done this for many years, do you ever take a year off? Does anyone in the family ever volunteer to do this?
I love Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I love what I think as a child. I tell my neighbors, be careful, and the kids, the grown-up kids, I say to them, be careful where you spend your Christmas with your little ones, because as they grow older and they're away from home, that's what they think about when they think of Christmas. was.
Yeah.
So there ought to always be some traditional things so that children, when they leave home, can hang their hats on it. They can say, about this time, I bet Mom is decorating her trees. Mm-hmm. Or about this time, I bet they're baking up that cake. I just think for us as a black people, we need to hold on to traditions. Mm-hmm. You can enhance it or enrich it, but have some things that are just standard. We always eat breakfast on Christmas morning together, mm-hmm. or we always take a stroll through the woods to get the tree. There ought to be some traditional things that you just always do. So I do Santa Claus, and everybody comes on Christmas Eve. If you don't come on Christmas Eve, you don't get Santa Claus on Christmas morning. You get a gift.
Right.
If you're at my house on Christmas Eve, you get Santa Claus on Christmas morning.
Right. And you know, I think the memories are critical to particularly young folks. Those memories are absolutely important.
Hang their hat on. They've just got to have that.
Now, if someone were interested in doing exactly what you're doing, decorating every room, putting up 17 trees and having themes for particular rooms, what would you advise them to do? Again, because we're talking about 3 months worth of work. What would you advise them to do?
Well, first of all, it doesn't start that big. I started off with one tree, but I've been married 52 years.
Praise God.
And every year, I added something, right? Mm-hmm. So it didn't start off that way. And the good years, I added two or three. And I had really good years. But I would tell them to start with what, you know, a lot of people say, don't try to start big. Start with one tree. I just think every kid ought to have a tree, whether you believe in Christmas or not. It's Christmas around the world, so hey. So Christmas, you should start with one tree. Then every year, you add another little something. And before you know it, you got Christmas everywhere. And it doesn't take a whole lot. I don't have anything on these trees. I'm looking at them, two of them right now at the foot of the staircase. I don't have anything on those trees that's over $5 or $6. The people like Hobby Lobby has that sale, 10 cents on a dollar. That means you can buy $100 worth for $10.
Right.
That's the kind of thing I do. It hasn't cost me anything but time. So it's something that everybody can do. I mean, it doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be where you and the children work together to making cookies and having a cookie something on the counter or something that says it's Christmas.
Yeah. Now, your daughter Kim mentioned a health component that is also quite germane to why this tradition is so important to you and, of course, your family. And, of course, when folks are struggling with either finances or health or whatever the case may be, you need something in your life that is going to bring you joy, something that is going to bring you happiness, not so much a distraction, but something that is going to bring a smile or put a smile on your face. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, that got me through. My hardest times in my life have always come right before Christmas, so I could play my music all the time. I could play my music and hang up, even though you're sad and heavy. Somehow you can put those balls on, and as you begin to do it, the spirit hits you that, hey, the same God that made you is taking care of you.
Amen.
And so, hey, when I got cancer, I might have cried maybe 2 or 3 days, practically all day, but I still put up my stuff. And somewhere in that crying and hollering and questioning, the spirit came. And then one day I was putting up, and I wasn't crying anymore, and I wasn't sad anymore. I just knew I would be all right. And as God would have it, I am all right.
Amen. Amen. Now, in our final minutes of this segment, I'd like to ask you, as you know, the world is in turmoil. There's a lot of anxiety in our country. Our community is still reeling from the tragic deaths of young black men, particularly Mike Brown and Eric Garner and so many young black men across the country. If you could speak to the nation, perhaps even the world, what would your message be?
I think about it on Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock all over the nation, people are worshiping. But are you truly worshiping when you hate your brother?
Yeah.
So I'm saying that you don't have to like me, but you do have to respect my right to be me.
Yeah.
So I think if you use the same kind of love that people will go all out to give those who don't have it Christmas time, they go all out to do that. why not do it all the time? You don't have to like me. You don't have to like the way I look. You don't have to like the way I speak. But respect my right to look and speak the way that I do. And love me because God made me.
Absolutely. Mrs. Marlene Richardson, affectionately known as the Christmas Tree Lady, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me. God bless you. And have a merry, merry, merry Christmas. Go home and put up one more thing.
All right. Thank you so much. God bless now.
God bless you.
All right, we're going to transition. This, of course, is the last weekend of 2014, and it's been quite a fascinating year. The president's signature legislation, the Affordable Care Act, and I like to talk about the ACA partly because there was so much division in this country. As you know, it's derisively known as Obamacare, and of course, it had a rocky start with Republicans mounting a failed Herculean effort to halt the implementation of the ACA with all kinds of political machinations, all kinds of stunts, ultimately wasting our time. The website's rollout was almost a disaster, but by the time March rolled around, millions of previously uninsured Americans signed up, and now 9 million added to upward of 15 million Americans now have health coverage. Despite all the stunts that the Republicans tried to pull, millions of Americans now have health coverage. I think there was upward of 50-some-odd votes in the House, or at least in the Senate, to halt this Affordable Care Act. And it's just been an interesting thing to see that millions of Americans, despite all the scare tactics, millions of Americans are now insured, and certainly we are glad for that. The economy. When the president took office in 2009, the economy was on the brink of collapse. Everybody knows that. We were all impacted. Certainly I was impacted by it. Unemployment was hovering near 10% nationally. We were losing upward of 750,000 jobs per month for the first 6 months of Obama's presidency. And the stock market, we don't even want to mention where the stock market was at that time. So as we close out 2014, unemployment nationally now is under 6%. Under 6%. Again, think about this. 2009, he takes office, President Obama, almost 10%. And then, of course, in the black community, high teens, 14, 15%. So a lot of people were suffering with regard to jobs in this country. But now we're under 6% with no help virtually from the Republicans. We've had 58 straight months of job growth, 58 straight months of job growth, with this quarter seeing well over the 200,000 mark in jobs added back to the economy each month without help from the Republicans. And I say, as many observers say, if there was a really robust infrastructure program, we can see jobs going through the roof. So we're closing out pretty strong, although we have a lot to do. The stock market and Wall Street are seeing impressive numbers consistently for probably the last 3, 4, or 5 years. So we've seen marked improvement. Jobs added back to the economy, unemployment under 6%. So there's some improvement. And we know that the Republicans had a great time. I laugh at this every time I think about the 2014 midterm elections. The president took a shellacking, as folks in the media would like to suggest. But 2014, the last couple of weeks, we've seen his swagger return. And his swagger is telling a different story. A story that is not indicative of a lame duck presidency. He won the immigration debate after signing an executive order halting deportations for children of undocumented immigrants. Swagger. Russia's economy is in the tank, proving that the president's patience and not bluster wins the day. swagger. We're now reestablishing relations with Cuba after 50 years of a failed policy against Cuba. President Obama made a promise when he was running for office. Promise fulfilled, albeit a long time, but we're getting things done. That's what I call swagger. Our economy is doing much better than countries that chose austerity as a means to end their economic crisis. Who is standing up as the leader of this world? Right now, of all the nations that posed and implemented austerity measures, the United States is the winner in terms of how we look economically around the world, because we chose a different path, a more sensible path, and certainly we are proud. And the president has a lot to be proud of. Swagger. In the latest spat with North Korea, positioned the president as a tough, a thoughtful, a really mindful of what our situation is in the world. We want someone who is thoughtful about our position, who does not thump his chest, thumb his nose at the world, and engage in all kinds of bluster. We want a thoughtful commander-in-chief who is in full control of his temperament, someone who engages those who are hostile to our nation's interest, who will engage in a tactful, in a way that is filled with foresight. That's what I want in a leader, and that's what we have in President Obama. And that's why I can talk about swagger, because he got it back in the last couple of weeks, despite what happened in the 2014 midterm elections. So I am royally proud of President Obama, and I get the sense that many of you believe that he does deserve his vacation in Hawaii, because he had and still has a lot on his plate. Of course, dominating the national discussion is the police killings of Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, John Crawford, and so many other black men, and it's weighing heavy on our collective hearts. Our nation is still grappling with how our grand jury system functions, and more importantly, we're asking the question to the larger American community, do black lives matter? Do we matter in this country? And I, like many of you, believe that yes, of course we do. Our lives do matter. And we're required to send a resounding message to this nation that black lives matter, and you are going to take us and our arguments seriously. That police accountability is demanded, and justice will not be in the exclusive domain of other communities. We demand and require justice. We're going to force police accountability. We're going to force our congressional leaders to do more with regard to this issue. We're going to fight to have every law enforcement officer wear a body cam to ensure accurate and unvarnished interaction with police. That's what we're going to demand, and we're going to demand it at all times. We are going to demand parity, equality, fairness in our criminal justice system. And so, to close out, I want to urge all of you to pray for the families of the slain NYPD officers. We do not condone or advocate violence to achieve justice. And I've said both publicly and privately that not all police are bad. That what we want as a community, what we deserve, what we require is that good cops slap handcuffs on bad police. That will go a long way in reducing the mounting tension between my community and the police. So pray for the families of officers Wen Jun Liu and Rafael Ramos, who were shot and, of course, killed by 28-year-old gunman Ishmael Brinsley. And I will also encourage you to pray for Ishmael Brinsley's family, who, in the wake of his despicable act of murder, has to cope with his suicide and the burden that his actions caused. Unbelievable pain to two families families who wanted their loved ones to come home at the end of their shifts. It's been an interesting year. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with your host, Ron Holland. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. I want to again thank Mrs. Marlene Richardson, affectionately known as the Christmas Tree Lady, for sharing her love for the Christmas holiday, for this joyous season, and for sharing her family's tradition. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Today's show is also available on our Praise Charlotte as well as our Old School 105.3 website. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.